Hi, folks. Steve Urban here, host of the Riderflex podcast and founder and CEO of our day job recruiting firm, Riderflex. We hope you enjoy this episode. And as a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast for updates and news. Finally, if you haven't already, check out the series of books we've published on hiring, interviewing, and overall career advice titled The Riderflex Guide, available on Amazon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Most homeowners don't have the time or expertise to properly take care of their home, which causes costly issues to arise. That's where Kura Home Maintenance comes in. We're a full-service, routine maintenance company that was developed by a certified home inspector. Each quarter, we service our clients' homes following manufacturers' recommendations to properly maintain all the necessary appliances. We provide the materials and expertise to prolong the life of your property, creating a healthy and efficient environment for your family. From top to bottom, we'll maintain and service your home. To get started, we have a property inspection to determine what needs to be maintained, and a maintenance plan is created based on your preferences. From refrigerator coils to filters, vents, and drains, we do it all, and we do it well. Contact us today for your free routine maintenance inspection. And never worry about your maintenance again.
So, Emily, is it, let's see, it's not warm down in Scottsdale yet, is it? No, not quite, probably. It's still cool weather.
It's my favorite temperature today. It's 73.
Okay, yeah, you're right there, right? Like, yeah, we're recording this at the end of March. So, Scottsdale, you're in that. What, you got like a 45-day window here where it's usually pretty good right in here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's usually pretty good through the end of May. Beginning of June starts to pick up there. But that's still pretty nice in the mornings and evenings. It's the real killer, to be honest with you, Steve, is September.
Is it? Really? Oh.
Yeah, because you've sort of weathered the storm July and August, and then it's still bloody hot in September. And that's when you start to question your life choices.
But you were raised in like you're from Arizona, right? You're from that area. Like you,
I am. Yeah, I was born in Ohio, but raised here. Yeah. So yes, I'm used to it, but it's still a mental game for this summer. You got to prepare. You really do.
It's so funny. Like 5 minutes before we got on the call, some friends of ours who live here in Colorado, they have a place in Yuma, and then they have a place in this little town called Sun Sights, which I think is, I don't know, 30 minutes from Tucson or whatever, Tombstone, something. Anyway, they were driving from Yuma back to the Tombstone area, and they literally like called me 5 minutes before I got on the phone with you, and I thought, isn't that interesting? That's ironic. I'm about to talk to Emily.
Yeah.
There are some of those, they're a little bit older than us. And so they, you know, they go down to Yuma and whatever they do down there, play bridge during the winter. And I don't know.
Soak up the rays. Yeah. I don't know. Pickleball, maybe.
Yeah, pickleball, whatever it is. I don't, I you know, I give them a hard time. Their name's Don and Judy. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not quite there yet, but you know, save a spot for me. let's see. Married, two daughters. Last time I talked to the teenagers, are they out of the house yet? Are you empty nesters or what's going on?
One of them is out of the house. One of them is a junior in college, which that's gone by fast. She's almost done with her junior year. And then one's a junior in high school. So we are, you know, we're kind of scooching up to the ledge here, about ready to jump off and be empty nesters in another year and some change. So
are you ready for that? Are you ready for it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good transition, you know, to have one and then the next one coming, like you sort of, you glimpse what's to come. I don't know that we're ever really fully ready for big transitions in life, but I'm aware it's coming and I really like my husband. So that's good. We have that we want to do together. So I think that's a good sign. It's, you know, the process of like, even now, even though it's not there yet, I feel like it's a process of grieving, loss and gain. So it's an interesting blend. I've been talking a lot about this lately with friends. And sometimes you feel like you're in the trough of the loss part of it, you know, when they come home for a vacation and leave. And then sometimes you feel like you're in the gain, you know, when they get here and then they leave. And then you got one who's my youngest, she's busy and out of the house a lot. I think that's what I've been thinking about quite a bit of how these life transitions, whether it's in work or in, you know, your personal life, it is that push-pull series of months or years that kind of get you into a new reality.
It's an interesting time. We've been empty nesters for a few years now. Now I'm all into it, right? I'm fully, like, I can't imagine going back. In fact, when my granddaughters are here, I'm just like, oh shit, that's a lot of work. At first it was weird. Yeah, it was weird. When the last one left, I would say it took us 12 months, probably, maybe a little longer. First year or two was kind of finding ourselves a little bit, kind of like, okay, we always kind of had hobbies, but we never really had time for them because we were always busy with kid stuff. But now we're into a groove. So yeah, you'll get
So
used to it.
what did you learn about yourself through that transition? I'm curious.
We live in Colorado, so I'm a big time. Now I'm a big time camper, trail rider slash hiker slash the whole thing, right? I have a Jeep that's all decked out, the whole thing. One of the biggest things that I learned was, and also now regret somewhat, I don't have a ton of regrets in life, but we spent a lot of time with kids in sports and activities, which I think is fine. And there was a lot of good memories there, but it's like our whole lives were around school activities and sports activities. And so we didn't really have a lot of hobbies as a family outside of that, because there just was never any time for it, you know? And now as an old guy, and I'm in my late 50s, and I love going to the mountains and stuff, but I rarely did that with my sons, like very few times, because they were in wrestling, they were in football, they were just, I mean, then they worked, and then, you know. And so I guess what I'm saying for anybody listening to the podcast is, when you do have kids at home, it's more than going to piano lessons and the softball games. Like, it's bigger than that. Like, you try to spend time with them on other family hobbies besides the school activities if you can. That was one of the big things I learned that we, I don't know if it was a mistake, but if you know what I'm saying.
An experience. I do. I think that there's a lot of social pressure to be very busy, and of course you want to give your kids opportunities to pursue things that they
Yes.
enjoy. But
Yes.
yeah, I'm getting that lesson as well myself. I remember when my oldest was about 13 and I felt like, you know, there was a gap. It was a tough time. And I signed us up one random Saturday to take an art class together. And the day came and it was a busy day, you know, sports and da-da-da, but I was like, no, we're going. We were late and we were going across town. There was an event, it was hard to park, all the things. It's one of my favorite memories,
Right. Right.
and there was a picture of us holding up the picture that we made, and I cherish it. I cherish it. And she does too, actually. So I really resonate with what you said. And I question sometimes if I'm not doing that enough with my youngest.
I got one more quick thing I'll tell you there. We get off the subject. There was a specific moment I remember after Spencer was our youngest when he left. And it was a specific evening. It was maybe a month or so, a few weeks or so after he'd left. My wife was working late. I had come home. It was by myself. My wife was not here. She was working late or somewhere. And it was, I don't know, it was, oh, I know what it was. It was a Friday, because I knew she wasn't going to be home. A Friday was coming up. So Friday afternoon, I was calling some friends. I was trying to get happy hour going, or I was trying to like meet some guys for some beers or do something, because it's like, oh, Friday, Kim's not gonna be there, the kids are gone. Like, what the hell am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? It's Friday. I was trying to get something lined up, right? Well, for whatever reason, I couldn't get anything lined up that night. You know, a couple of people bailed on me or whatever. So it's a Friday. It's like 6:30. Sitting on my couch, I had a little shot of glass of bourbon, whiskey, and sitting there on the couch. And it's super quiet, and I can hear the clock ticking. There's a clock on the wall. clock's ticking. I had no TV on, no music playing. I'm just sitting there. I'm thinking to myself, okay, so I guess this is it. Like this is life now. This is my life now. There's no kids. This is how it's gonna be. Like this is it. So I had to find my purpose. I had to find my purpose.
Friday afternoons are pretty. I've had a couple of Friday afternoons like that where my husband's worked late and my youngest is, she has a boyfriend now, so she spends a lot of time with him. And it's like, it's Friday.
Yeah, let's do something.
And it's kind of quiet and you're like, oh, all right.
Yeah. All right.
Yes, I can relate to
Okay.
that
Now that
too.
we're feeling sorry for ourselves. So let's see. What can we talk about? All right. So tell me about the you and the business. Tell me what's going on with Root and River. Give us, first of all, for the listeners, you've been on the show before. So for anybody listening, they should go back and check out the first episode. But maybe a refresher on Root and River in general, maybe give us an updated elevator pitch and then tell us what's going on and what's the latest.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. And I'm so glad to be back. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
So, Root and River, we believe brand is how other people experience your soul. So, it's a pretty different take on branding. We practice what we call intrinsic branding, which is branding from the inside out. Whereas typically the conventional approach was branding from the outside in. How do you want to appear? What do you think people want to hear you say? It's really extrinsic. But we've been practicing this of intrinsic branding. So we help our clients uncover and articulate the foundational elements, language elements of their brand so that they can differentiate themselves over time and build brands that are very engaging and evocative and compelling. So we really work on the language of the translating almost the spirit of the essence, because we think brand is spiritual in the term, in the sense of essence or energy. It really begins with that leader or founder, but it also just emanates out through a leadership team. And we rarely sort of pause to dig in and find the words that translate that emotion into the experience of the brand. So we help our clients do that. We walk alongside of them, and we have a very co-creative, collaborative process that unearths the purpose and meaning. And so we go through things like, to make it more tangible for your listeners, we go through exercises around vision, around mission, and around beliefs and standards, we call them, often called core values. We dig into the message, the brand narrative, and differentiation, what makes you different and special. And we sort of pull it all together into that larger story. And we're very focused on making this very conversational, because brands are born in conversations. And I think one of the mistakes people make with branding or marketing is just saying too much. They think it's about explaining. You go down that road and it is very windy and it gets long and nobody cares after a while, after a few seconds. So really, brand and marketing is more about expression, and it's more and more about expression today. And I think in the age of AI, there will be greater efficiencies in language, but there's still such a hunger for the human touch and the energetic or emotional element that we as human beings bring. So yeah, that's a little bit about the work we do.
Do you focus then on the 30,000-foot strategic brand messaging, but you don't get into the tactical SEO and specific campaigns or slogans? I mean, do you do the lower level tactical stuff too, or you stick with the strategy and the branding message?
Sort of in the middle. So after we're done like laying that foundation and going through our process, having some deliverables around brand voice and brand strategy, we get into website copy. So we write website copy for our clients. And
Okay.
then all agree that we'd like to continue. We begin to do content mapping. And so we focus on long form content that's really aimed at the LinkedIn platform and an email as well. Those are two really usually very rich places for our clients to be. So we
Okay.
help create content, long form content. But we don't get into the weeds in marketing. Like we work alongside of our clients because we want them to be active on the LinkedIn platform and we want them to be participants because that works best. And that will help them actually build their influence and create opportunities for them to connect And
Do
you
you
can get
like do you prepare social media posts for them on LinkedIn and then help them get more followers, things like that?
Yeah, we take an interview and approach and a coaching approach. We interview them, we create content, we have a formula that we use that we kind of implement for them, but we ask them to go on the platform and post it. We deliver it to them. And then
Okay.
that way they're on the platform, they're able to engage. And we give them other tips. So we kind of coach them along on how to engage in the best ways and support them as they post and with resharing. But we'll never be a social media agency. We really like to be specific about our work. We love brand strategy, language, and content. And that's really what we do best. So that's what we can provide to our clients.
So you're a branding agency, not an advertising agency.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
And if we have a client that wants us to kind of, oversee some of their marketing team, we're happy to do that as well. We actually really love that. We love when we're working with a client who has an internal marketing leader because everything, it flows out a little bit easier that way. We can help coach them and work together and come up with strategies and campaigns that are all in alignment with the brand strategy and language. So we're very happy to work alongside those leaders.
How often do you focus on small startup, medium? What types of companies do you focus on?
Yeah, we focus on small, privately held service-based businesses. So that's typically our clients. There are a couple startups. I love to work with female founders and startups. And generally, we have the best experiences working with startup founders who are a little bit more mature in their careers. And so, because part of branding is really knowing yourself. So we find that our approach really meshes well with a more experienced startup founder. But for the most part, it's small, privately held businesses, and that can be a very small team, or it can be up to 50, 100 employees. And in some cases, we really love working with legacy businesses. So second generation owners, third generation owners who are coming into an established business that's already running well. They take care of their people well. They have a pretty solid book of business, but while they've come to be known for something, that new leader, that next generation leader, wants to put their mark on it and wants perhaps all of our clients across the board. They want to, we call them the defiers, because they want to change their community, their industry, or the world through their brand. They see brand as larger. They see it as an opportunity to share some philosophical ideas and present that. And that's really, as they realize we're not really telling, they'll say things like, oh, we're not telling our story very well. Or I feel like something's off in the brand. Those are sort of the conversation starters when they come to us.
How often do companies have their mission statement and values truly dialed in? Not very often, right?
Rarely. Rarely. And it's one thing, and I say this quite a bit. It's very common for businesses to have done a little bit of core values work. You did that exercise at the time, and then maybe you thought a little bit about the culture here and there. You got a day on the calendar. And then maybe once in a while, you thought about the brand experience, the customer experience. It's very rare for brands to do all three of those things intentionally and in alignment. And that's really at the heart of what intrinsic branding is. It's digging into the root system. We call it the soil of soul to get very clear and specific and concise on those pieces. So that, and then take it to the next step so you understand how you're living them out internally first. So it's fine to have core values. We help our clients uncover about five of them. We call them beliefs. And then we help them create little mantra statements called standards around how they're living them out in their culture and how they want other people to hold them accountable. So again, we're always trying to begin internally. Your standards as an organization are not just for everyone else, they're for you first. And then finally, taking this third step to look at, okay, how do we create a brand experience that's reflective of the beliefs, of the behaviors, of the mission, so that we have this moment with our audience where they, if it's a rose in a garden, they're been our And as a rose in the garden, they're bending down to inhale it. And this thing happens where identity occurs, like this switch of identity. Suddenly, the client is no longer just receiving services, but they feel that sense of affinity or connection to the brand. I mean, that is what Disney has done extremely well. Nike, Starbucks, these are brands that have created that identification moment inside of the brand experience that's in alignment with the other pieces.
You mentioned small business owners, service level businesses. Okay. I would be willing to bet. So when you say small business, service business, let's use a, I don't know, the local plumbing business. They got the family and four plumbers and three trucks, and they do $2 million a year. Whatever. Okay. That business typically does not have a mission statement and do not have values. First of all, I bet 50% of those don't even have it. And the other 50% that have it, 80% of the employees that work there don't know what they are. What do you think?
And
How close
this
am
is
I?
where I think this is where our worlds collide a little bit. I think you're totally right. I think you're spot on. And so that's why when a company comes along, and we've worked in that space before, right? When a company comes along that has that and they can attract talent, which, as you know, people want to understand, doesn't matter what kind of business it is, that can embody it and live into it and lean into it and talk about it, that really sets them apart. And they're no longer just providing X service, they are representing an idea, that's deeper and richer.
Now, you know, the employees probably want that deeper, richer experience. The problem, the challenge for you, I bet, often is the owners are just like, Emily, listen, I'm worried about cash flow this week. I'm trying to make payroll in 2 weeks. I got to go down to the bank and talk to them about a line of credit. By the way, if I don't sign this fucking contract over here, we're going to be out of business anyway. And you want to talk to me about values and mission statements? I don't have time for that. I
Well,
mean,
we don't really.
is that a challenge? I mean, do you get that?
I think that when our clients come to us, they've recognized the importance of that structure, because there's a lot of inefficiency in not knowing what your brand's all about.
Which is causing the cash flow problems.
Right. So it's
Could be,
about a stable
could be,
foundation.
could be,
It could be
could be,
contributing or causing, right? When you
could be.
don't know who you are and what makes you different, that makes it very difficult to sell, makes it difficult to create experiences that are distinct that people will talk about and recommend.
Yes.
So I think by the time our clients come to us, they've already had that moment and been like, what's going on here?
Ah.
And they realized part of what's missing, or, maybe they don't even have a website. Maybe their website was built 10, 15 years ago, and they're
Right.
like, this sucks, and we can't actually do what we need to do anymore. And I also think most of the time, this is really important, I'm seeing this more and more. Most often our clients come to us and they say, you know what? I recognize I don't want to do business with everyone. I really want to get into who do I want to do business with? And we work on ideal audience. I didn't mention that before, but we work with our clients to help them uncover graphics of their audience. Who are they for? Who are they not for? Getting very crystal clear on that so they can build more intentional businesses that are going to attract the right audience and opportunities. And also, I always teach people branding is much more about repelling than it is about attracting in some cases, particularly when you're at that formative moment. You have to be yourself so much and understand what that is that the opportunities that would be misaligned bounce away before they become a drain of your time, resources, and energy. And really, those clients that take so much energy and you actually lose money on them. That's what we're trying to be very clear on who we are, so that those people go, oh yeah, Root and River's not for me. That's not for me, that whole intrinsic branding approach. I'm like, great. Because for me, as a small business owner myself, I really only have conversations with people who have already understood what our philosophy is and they're bought in on that. So I don't sell. It's just a matter of, is the timing right? And that's the approach that we model and that we teach our clients. And our clients, more and more, I think, in this crazy, busy, full of options world, business owners are wanting to get more and more specific about who they're for and who they're not for. And that's where we love to be.
It's a wonderful thing to get your business going strong enough to be able to say the word no. You can't. When you're first starting out and there's no money in the checking account, you're saying yes a lot. I remember the first time at Rider Flex that Scott and I were able to fire a client, basically, but just saying, hey, look, good luck. We don't want to work with you anymore. Like that was such, that was a moment for us. Like, wow, we can actually do that. Like, you know, we can get rid of assholes. We, you know, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, we have a no assholes policy. We have a warning label on our website. It's like who we love working with and who we are not for. And so we are very tuned into that repelling piece because
I like to repel. I like that word, repel.
repel. It's important. You know, as human beings, we're always looking, just like we said earlier, we're like, it's a yin yang. We're looking at the, oh, who do you want to attract? And that's lovely. And everyone loves to talk about that. But the opposite is also true. There's a repelling power that you have.
I agree. Next thing I want to ask you about is the third generation or the second or third generation families. You know, I have done a lot of consulting and worked with a bunch of companies where the kids took over. Most of the time, they're fucking idiots, to be perfectly honest. It's like, you know, I meet them and I go, okay, you couldn't even get a job at 7-Eleven if you weren't born into this family. But now somehow you're running this $5 million company because your dad is Johnny and you're running this thing into the ground. And I don't know if I can help you. Like, I see that all the time, constantly. So besides me just ranting about it, my question for you as a provider to these small businesses, what do you do? How do you handle it when you go in to a legacy owned business, you're trying to help them, and you just know, maybe this goes back to what you said earlier, you just fire the clients that you don't want to work with, but you just know, you're just like, okay, this kid is not gonna, like, this kid can't run this business. Like, there's no hope for this family if this sibling is in charge. What do you do? Do you go to the old man or old woman and say, remove Johnny and put Sally in place? Or what do you do? How do you handle it, Emily?
Well, we're really called it like the who we're hired by is that leader, is that second generation leader. And so, like I was talking about earlier, the way that we approach branding is so different and does really require some deep inquisitive self-curiosity.
Yeah.
And so typically I really haven't been in that situation where it's like
Okay.
I'm reporting up to, you know, maybe the former owner or the preceding generation.
But have you been
Typically
in a
the focus.
situation? Have you been in a situation where you've met the kid or the daughter, the son or the daughter that took over, and you know that it's not good? Have you been in that situation?
Not in a professional context, in a personal context, I've seen that happen.
Oh,
Like
you've
in
gotten lucky. Okay, you've gotten lucky. You must have great clients.
well, it's a repelling thing, you know? It's like most of the time, if people aren't really interested in doing that deep dive, they're not calling us. So, and we don't go chasing, you know, business like calling
Okay.
every generation business in town to see if we can offer our services. It's just not our approach. But yeah, I think that. That's why we're so clear on our methodology and our philosophy, because if it's not for you, then we won't waste each other's time.
Have you ever had a situation where the old man or the old couple that used to own it comes into the marketing meeting and they're like, "What the hell are you guys doing in here?" No, we've always done it this other way. Like, this is all a waste of time. Has that ever happened?
I haven't had that situation, but I have had like a situation where we're working with a client and the owner who's wanting to step back. I've watched that person sort of do a
Yeah.
dance of like, you know,
Yes.
but I want to do that. I want to come in and fix, but then they're having to cycle backwards from that. So I think it's a dance for them, because I think, you know, the whole desire to step out of the business and live the way they want to live seems great on paper, but then when it's happening, it can be tough. It can be difficult for them.
Is the business on the second generation because they make a good product and they deliver a good service even without the missions and values, but once you clean that up for them, they can do even more
Typically,
money?
yeah, I'd say that's true. And they have more aligned clients who
Mm.
then to like our ideal audience, our rubric for that is they have to be in alignment with your ethic, with your philosophy and vision. They
Yeah.
They need to be energy positive for you, good challenges so that they make your audience or your work better, and then they refer you on. Like that's sort of the baseline of what we're looking for in terms of an ideal audience.
Why do you have the
You
passion for the service business instead of product business? Where'd that come from? How'd you get there?
know, that was really something that sort of emerged over time when I looked back at our client base. I was like, we're predominantly service-based business. We do have some product that tend to be digital products in the tech space, digital space, but it's just sort of evolved over time.
All right, switching gears here. You have a communications, PR, writing, English slash background,
Correct.
right? Pretty much. See, I refreshed my homework on you before the podcast. Based on that, I want to know your thoughts around where AI is going, especially as it relates to content and writing in general. I just want to, how are you feeling? Maybe you could start at 30,000 feet. How are you feeling as somebody who probably took a lot of pride in their writing style, probably still does? Like, how are you feeling where I can just talk into ChatGPT and it can write for me whatever I want it to write in seconds? Like, how are you feeling about all of this, Emily? Tell me. Tell me.
I mean, at first I was like awed by it, honestly. I was like, wow, you know, this is pretty incredible. And then as I've used it more and more and gotten over like that initial sense of like, oh, you know, I think everyone has that knee-jerk fear reaction of like, oh my gosh, is this going to take away all the things? And now as we've integrated it, I'm trying to approach it with curiosity and I actually love it. We were talking, you know, before we started recording about AI note takers and how helpful it is. And I'm really finding those opportunities to help us almost acting. I see it as a thought partner for myself personally. It helps me as a writer kind of get unstuck. It helps me take a look at something and go, no, that's off. Or if you pay attention to the prompts that you use and the refinement of your prompts, that can also give you some insight into your own creation, right? So if you're like, oh, make it more warm, oh, make it more, add a little bit of humor, what you're doing is you're wanting to infuse that into your own writing. So I think it's a note for when you do need to sit down and write your own thing. Oh, reflecting back on how I use the prompts, how I interacted with it. So I'm excited by it in a lot of ways. And from a business owner's perspective, I love the efficiencies that it brings. I think it always does take still that editor's eye, which I really like to exercise. So I encourage people to not be afraid and to step into it and see what it can do for you. I love the written word, I won't lie. Like I'll always be a book reader in an actual book and I'll be a poetry writer, and those are things I enjoy. We're talking about hobbies earlier. But AI doesn't erode that for me.
Do you worry that it could maybe not eliminate marketing agencies, but reduce the number of agencies because a lot of the tactical doing, so to speak, could be replaced by AI that people can do on their own? Do you worry about that?
Well, I think as a culture, like, I don't worry about it. I think if that's going to happen, it's going to happen. All markets are disrupted. All niches are, you know, disturbed at times. And so I don't worry about that. And I'm always a fan of like putting the power closer to the people who are creating the brand. So if an internal marketing team can do something that an external marketing agency used to do, I think that results in more authentic work that's closer to the root, the source. So I think that's good. And, you know, if it replaces brand strategy at some point, well, I guess I'll have to
How do you
reinvent
think I feel?
myself,
I'm in the recruiting business. Like the robots can almost do, well,
Steve.
not almost, they can do 80% of my job now. I mean, I'm thinking the same thing. Every day I wake up and there's a new app and I'm just like, shit,
Well,
okay,
the
who
value
did?
of that 20%, right? I mean,
Yes, agreed, agreed.
it's important, you know. I would worry, and I see this more and more just from a a larger perspective, like the AI, and people aren't using it very sophisticatedly yet. So you can see when that's like, oh, that was AI generated, and now all of our businesses are sounding the same because we're literally all using the same source material. Before we were just copying one another, but now there's a lot of just more having the AI write it. And so again, I see that it's a very interesting contrast because it's the rise of that need for the human touch. That 20% is still really critical, and we long for it as human beings. So I don't. We're ready to go total robot yet, but yeah, I could be wrong. We'll see.
It's a fascinating time we're living in, right? I mean, can you believe it? I mean, seriously, I just can't even
It's not pretty.
I'm already so used to using ChatGPT for stuff, I can't even I almost can't function now without it. Just with whatever. Like, oh, proof this email. Here's a social media post I'm thinking about. Create something for me. Okay, yeah, cool. Make that funnier. Boom, done. Whatever, like whatever, right? Here's a job description that we prepared for the client. Can you please proof this? And oh, by the way, can you make it more blah blah blah? Boom, done. Seconds. Like already, I can't even. It's like, wow. Okay, 2 years ago, what was it like 2 years ago when I used to have to spend all this time doing this?
Yeah, right.
I literally
It's quick.
right. What was that? What was that?
It's interesting how fast the uptake has been and how quick we are to integrate it into our work.
I guess that's the part that makes me nervous, right? It's scary and exciting at the same time. It's exciting because wow, look how this makes me so much faster, and I can put all this into my work. And you go through that moment, you're like, wow, that's really cool. And then later that night, when you're having cocktails or whatever, and you're relaxing, you're like, shit, what's everybody going to do for a living in 2 years? A little bit. I mean, at this point, here's a great example of things I could do now that I couldn't do before. First of all, I can interview a candidate on Zoom, which I never used to be able to do before. My note taker, MetaView, can record our entire conversation. It can recap all of my notes and everything about what the candidate said automatically. I don't have to take the notes. Okay. I can take those notes with the candidate's resume, and then I can tell ChatGPT to do a write-up on the candidate from their resume and from my conversation. And it'll just do it in seconds. I mean, it's just like, wow, okay. And I'm just using one example. Anyway, what was my point? I don't know what my point is. So we were talking
Well,
about
I'll have a
that.
question for you on that is like when you look at that output, that final product, do you often do you like go in and change, add, subtract? Like, do you ever look at it and go, oh, you know what? It missed this whole part that I feel is important. Like, I'm wondering.
I have two reactions or two answers to that. First, I hear people, let's take it up to 30,000 feet for a second. I hear people say, well, AI is not perfect. It will hallucinate or make mistakes from time to time. My reaction to that is, oh, and humans were perfect before that. Humans always got it right. That's my first reaction. Okay. My second reaction is, yes, I am, and I hope everybody that's listening to this episode does. I am still checking it, because just like I would check if I had Johnny, one of my recruiters, prepare something I was about to send to a client, I would take a quick look at it before we send it. Kind of the same thing. I'm going to take a look at it and make sure, it looks right and something didn't get missed. But my final point is, this is what's scary. It's only going to get better, Emily. It's only going to get better. Like, whatever we see today, it's not going to get worse. It's going to get better. That's what scares the hell out of me. Did you see the video of Figure One, the Figure One robot that hands the guy the apple and puts the dishes in the dish sink and he's talking to him? Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
I just, wow. I was like, okay. Anyway, one more
I'll check
question on
out.
what's that?
I'll check. after this and let you know how
Figure one,
terrifying.
yeah. Let me ask you this. If you found out your junior in high school, if you found out she was creating all of her homework assignment on ChatGPT and wasn't doing any of the writing or anything herself, would you be okay with it?
No, I wouldn't.
But let's go back. All right, now let me challenge, let me throw a challenge out there.
Unless that was part of the assignment. Caveat.
Okay, but here's a challenge. What year did they come out with calculators? I'm trying to remember. I don't know. I don't even know. Let's just guess. Let's just guess. 1950. I don't know. I have no idea. 1940. I don't know. First calculator. I wonder what the parents said when those calculators first came out. And the kid came home and was like, "Dad, I can just do this math with the calculator. Like, I don't need to long form it. I don't need to long form it on paper." And the dad was like, No. No, you can't use that calculator. You need to do the long form math." Are we now, as parents, having that same type of reaction with this tool? I think that's a fair question to ask ourselves.
I think it is, and I think it's good to reflect back at other moments, you know, in history when I was at a presentation and the presenter put up this quote about this technology that was destroying our ability to write and to process information verbally, and it was about the typewriter, right? So it was,
Exactly.
you know, I think it's
Yes.
important, but to your point about it learning and only getting better, that's where the technology is sort of, and I guess adding in the quickness with which it can learn and get better. That's the thing. Like you bought, you know, I had the TI, I don't know, 80 or whatever in my high school, right? It was a ginormous one. And compared to the first calculator, which I'm sure was pretty limited in its capabilities. So yes, there have been those incremental changes, but now that we're facing that at a breakneck speed,
Right.
that's really where it's like, whoa,
I think you just hit, you just really keyed in on something there. It is the seismic, it's the size of the change and the speed of the change that is so massive and so fast. It's just like, it's just kind of blowing you back, right? Like, wow, okay. When spell check and grammar check came out on Microsoft Word, which quite frankly is a form of AI. Like that was kind of a small change, right? Where we're like, okay, well, I guess it's okay if the AI in Microsoft Word gets my spelling errors. That's okay. But now it's like, oh, it can just write the whole damn thing for us. Boom, just like that. Like, okay, whoa, that's different. That's fast. Holy shit.
What I worry about too is like you and I are paying attention. Like we
Big time.
know,
I'm watching
right?
it closely. Yes.
There's so many people who paying attention. They don't know
Bingo.
that AI
Bingo.
can do a ransom call and it could sound like your kid, you
Yes.
know, calling
Yes.
you. So yeah, that's what also concerns me is that discernment. Is that are people paying attention? Are they going to be educated about how this is already part of what they're consuming? And yeah, that's what scares me.
It is so fascinating and interesting you bring that up. So this afternoon, right after this podcast, my wife, in fact, is doing the editing on it upstairs right now. I just recorded an episode, say, and the title is "Pay the F Attention." And it's on exactly what you just said. Like it's me saying from a recruiter career perspective, my message is you better fucking pay attention when you're deciding what to go to school for, what skill set to learn. All these things, like you better pay attention because if you don't, you're going to make poor choices and AI is going to eliminate whatever it is you thought you were going to do for a living. Like pay attention. And I'm really getting on my soapbox here. I don't know. We went down this road of AI, sorry, but
Well, good.
like, you know, I still get on the Zoom call with people today, even. This week, they're like, "Oh yeah, ChatGPT. Yeah, I heard about it. I haven't really, you know, I didn't spend time on that yet." And I'm just looking at them like, "Bro, like you are being left behind. Like, what are you doing? Like, pay attention, man." "Oh yeah, that technology, that'll never, you know, that'll never really." And I'm like, "Okay."
Pay attention, figure out how you feel about it, figure out how you're going to approach it.
How? Yes.
And I mean, just have some thought around it because you're going to get passed by and left
Gonna get
out,
passed by.
or in the worst case, you know, taken advantage of,
Taken
hurt,
advantage of. Hurt. Yes.
by this technology. It probably will happen. I'm not a do like I try not to be negative, but it's a reality, and I think,
It's reality.
yeah,
It's
gotta be
reality.
aware. Gotta be aware.
If you're a marketing agency or you're an advertising agency and you're not using it to your advantage, you're gonna be crushed. Crushed. Same for recruiting firms, by the way. Both businesses that we're in. I actually had one more thing on this. I know we're almost out of time. I just recently let a recruiter go that worked for us. She didn't want to use ChatGPT. She didn't want to use MetaView for taking notes. She didn't want to use the recorded videos. She's like, I'm not, no. She's like, that's just that's against my morals or whatever. I'm like, okay. I'm glad that you understand who you are as a person, and that's cool. Go be a recruiter somewhere else. Because at my firm, we're going to stay on top of what's going on. We're not going to be left behind or crushed. Sorry. You know, we're moving forward. And I highly recommend, as a business owner, all small business owners, pay attention, use it to your advantage, you know, and make it help, let it help you be smarter, faster, and more efficient. Anyway, enough about that. How did we get off on that topic?
It comes down to that growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, and fixed mindsets are killers. They're killers for your
They are.
development, for the business development. Like, however, if you stay, and I get it, I get being afraid, but a fixed mindset's just
Yep.
toxic.
Circling back around to what you do for a living, I am in 100% agreement that a vast majority of small businesses do not have a clear mission, a clear set of values. None of that. And their employees, and even if they do, their employees have no freaking clue what it is. So I would just be willing to bet, first of all, the country's made up of small business owners more than anything else, right?
Correct.
And 80% of them need to call Emily right now.
That's right.
Because they could use your help. Are you affordable? What do you want to talk about your fees? What do you want to tell us? Are you affordable? What do you want to, anything you want to share?
I think we're very affordable for a small business, small to mid-sized businesses. I always work with our clients. We have a scope of work, but we can tailor it to different budgets and different sizes of teams. So when you get into bigger leadership teams, obviously that's a longer engagement, costs more, but typically we can come in and help. We work virtually as well ever since the pandemic. So there's lots of ways to work together. So I always say if it feels right to take this approach for your business, we'll figure it out. We'll find a way to work together.
Website,
Yes.
rootandriver.com. Rootandriver.com.
Yes, ROOT. Depending on which part of the country you're in, you could think route, root, but ROOT and .com is where we're at. And if you want to get in touch, you can click on the connect or the contact page and send me a note
You want to
or
show
just
us the
reach
book?
out.
You want to grab the
Oh,
book too? Let's do the book.
if you're interested and if you still like reading actual books like me, because I'm a word nerd, our book is Rooting Up: Essays on Modern Branding. And those are just like little takes, very quick reads. Just read one before bed or to get your day started, and they will be thought-provoking, I guarantee you that.
Let's try something. Let's try something. I want to try something. So I know we're out of time. You got a minute? We're just going to go 2 minutes over.
Yes.
All right. I want to try something here. So on the treadmill in the mornings lately, I've been asking ChatGPT to give me verbal book reviews. Like I'll say, give me a book review on this book, and she'll talk to me, right? And then after she gives me the review, I'll be like, okay, give me a chapter by chapter breakdown. And I'm doing my workout and she's talking to me. And then I'll go, okay, well, ask me, now I want you to quiz me. Ask me a bunch of multiple choice questions about what I just learned. And she'll start asking me questions.
Oh my God,
It's
that's cool.
totally cool. I love it, right? I love it. Let's ask it about your book right now. Let's try
Right.
it.
Oh.
Okay. Hold on. Let me just pull it up here. Okay. I would like to do a book review of the book titled, oh shit, I just forgot what the title was. What is it?
Rooting Up: Essays
Rooting
in
Up.
Modern Branding.
By Emily Sigorsky.
And Justin Foster.
Oh, hold on. Rooting Up. Rooting Up. Okay, hold on. Let's try it. Be patient with us, audience. All right, the book by Emily Sigourney called Rooting Up. I want you to do a book review for me on it. Tell me about the book.
It looks like I ran into a bit of a snag.
Oh, damn it. Who's it? What's Justin's last name?
Foster. I'm putting it in chat.
Emily Sigourney and Justin Foster, they're authors of the book called Rooting Up. Give me a book report or a book review on it, please.
Rooting Up: Essays on Modern Branding by Emily Sigourney and Justin Foster is more than just a book. It's a manifesto for modern branding in the 21st century. Diving into the essence of what a brand truly means today, this compilation of 44 thought-provoking essays serves as both an introduction to and a deep dive into intrinsic branding. The authors, co-founders of Root Plus River, share their audacious and heretical ideas on branding, urging leaders to look inward and redefine the role of brands and their impact on the world. The book is organized around three central themes. First, it discusses the basics of branding, emphasizing that brands, like babies, don't just magically appear, but require a foundational understanding. Second, it explores the intimate link between leadership and branding, suggesting that the way leaders treat themselves and others significantly shapes their brand's culture and customer experience. Lastly, it offers a fresh perspective on marketing, highlighting that success lies not in complexity, but in the clarity and consistency of the message delivered over time. Sigourney and Foster advocate for a shift from stale leadership practices and fear-based marketing to a more authentic and humanistic approach. They argue that great brands are spiritual experiences, reflecting the soul and beliefs of those behind them. This vision for branding is not just about selling products or services, but about creating meaningful connections and inspiring change. Through Rooting Up, readers are encouraged to challenge their preconceptions about branding, embracing it as an extension of their values and mission. It's a guide for those ready to explore the deep roots of their brand and confidently show the world their true identity.
I happen to have the author, Emily, here with me right now. I want you to quiz her. Give her a multiple choice question about her book. Go for it.
All right, Emily, here's a question for you about Rooting Up. What central theme do the essays in Rooting Up revolve around? A, the technical aspects of digital marketing strategies. B, the evolution of consumer behavior in the digital age. C, intrinsic branding and its impact on leadership and marketing. D, the history of advertising from the 20th century to the present. Let's see how well you know your own book.
What is it, Emily? What's the answer?
C.
Spot on, Emily.
Anyway, hey, that's great. That was a nice little plug for your book there, right? That was good.
It really was. That was a surprise, but fun. Thanks for doing that.
That's a nice little plug for your book. Anyway, that's how I'm getting to read. That's why I'm going through a bunch of books right now, right there.
That's so cool. Very cool. Yeah.
Anyway, Emily, I'm going to hit stop on the recording, but hang on just a second, okay? Thank you so much for being on the show again.
Thank you, Steve.